You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour of this Hagman and Hagman edition on this Tuesday. We are joined live each and every Tuesday in our third hour by the one and only Mr. Stan Deo. His website is standeo.com. Go there and bookmark his site for a whole bunch of great information. You got Holly's Dare to Prepare. You got Cosmic Conspiracy, as well as the latest news and interviews that Stan does. And the content that he works tirelessly for putting up on his site in the show images page so that he can provide us with graphics for what he's talking about on our show each and every week he comes on. Stan, it's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be here, guys. We've lived and survived another week, and taxes are almost over.
Yeah. Yes, they are. And
I wonder how many people were, what a mess the system is.
I want to hear all the complaints about the Obamacare and the tax stuff. I can't wait to see some of the stories, horror stories from that coming out, because you know, there's a lot of people
willing, you reckon, on their taxes.
Yeah, the people who thought it was free and they didn't have to pay anything, and then their income tax disappears and they wonder why. No, a lot of that's coming.
You know, Stan, before I bring you on, I just getting a lot of emails. Let me just say this, ladies and gentlemen. I am not a minister. I am not a pastor. I am a Christian man just trying to do the right thing, okay? Please understand that my terminology occasionally may not be accurate. When I say, you know, I just got an email here, the Lord does not lead us to read the Bible and pray. Okay, whatever the terminology,
The Lord does not lead us to read the Bible and pray?
In other words, it's our response to a loving Savior who shed his blood for us, and if we're waiting to be led, as a, you know, passiveness. Now, I'm not looking at this as a criticism. I'm just saying this, and because I'm not going to take away time from Stan, I just want to clarify something, okay? Because of the last hour, it was pretty passionate. My passion is this. I can't stand weak Christians standing out there saying, well, we have to stand up for what is right, what the Bible says. This is my personal opinion. It reflects no one else in this room.
And if I thought there was anything that was unbiblical about what you said or the way you said it, I'd be the first one to tell you.
Of course you would, but I'm just saying that we cannot sit back, or we should not, in my view, and I'm going to end it here because I don't want to take any more time away from Stan. We cannot, in my view, sit back and do nothing as Christian men. Christian men should lead. And if I happen to use the word follow, or, you know, being led to pray, or if I misstate something, it's not because of anything other than the fact that I am not a minister or pastor. So don't even think I am. I'm the furthest thing from it, and I certainly wouldn't want to be a minister or pastor, only because that job is for the anointed, really. I mean, it's just, wow. Well, I couldn't imagine being a pastor I just couldn't imagine it. But
we barely have the fortitude to be radio show hosts.
Exactly. And I'm just trying to be obedient. That's it. and passionate. If you don't like my passion, then listen to someone else. No, that's all I'm going to say. So go ahead. Stan, sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut in your time.
That's all right. You got to take care of business. Yep, that's fine.
Consider it done. All right. So what's on the agenda this week?
Well, I was talking at the, well, we're still offline with Joe about this tritium dump they're proposing over at Fukushima. And, you know, tritium, it's a radioactive isotope of hydrogen. It's H3, you know, in the 3 is above the H, okay, in the exponent position. Anyway, it takes a little over 12 years for the amount of tritium that you've got in a test case for half of that to disappear and to degrade into, you know, helium-3, which, of course, is not so bad. But the method of taking tritium out of water can be done in the laboratory, but it's very expensive. As I recall, I think it may involve a charged centrifuge and things like that, and spin it out, and you know, because you know the weight differences. But you can't do that with several hundred tons of water economically. Now, the saying at the moment that there's you know, no risk over there, that it's not going to get into the drinking water, and not to worry. And, you know, I hope they don't have another big earthquake, but you know as well as I do that when you have a bell ringer, like a you know, Richter 9 some odd that broke the Fukushima radiation plant to start with, that for years after that you will have aftershocks that come in the same area. It's just the way it works. It splash, and then it goes doom, 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 and splash again, but not as bad as it was before. Probably a Richter 7 to 8 somewhere, but it's coming. You know, will it, you know, cause the containers they've got to break and let that into the water? If it does, hopefully it will be diluted very rapidly. I'm not sure what the concentration is for humans ingesting fish that have got it in them, but however much of it you get, it's going to take 12 years for half of it to disappear, and then another 12 years for half of the half until you're only a quarter of what you took in. So if you live that long, if you've gotten a fatal dose, you're not going to live. So I don't know that, you know, the situation over there is handled. I mean, you know, they're using 300 tons of water to cool the reactors every day, and they're getting stuff out of it. I mean, you know, they're removing some of the radioactive cesium and strontium, but the tritium is kind of like, almost like part of water itself, hydrogen 3. And it's just very hard, very expensive, and very not cost effective to try to remove it in quantities like we're talking about. They've got over 1,000 of those tanks with the water that's been used to cool the reactor, and you know, it keeps growing by 300 tons, and so that's just, it's a worry. And if it weren't, if that were the only place, you know, Japan's Fukushima thing were the only place we had to worry about, then okay, maybe there would be a workaround. But we've got reactors here in this country, in California, and various places are sitting on fault lines. The same kind of reactors they've got over there in Japan at Fukushima. And one of these days, we're going to get it. And it's going to spread across this country in the air and the water and with people and animals and everything. So it's just a matter of time. And I do worry for everyone when that happens.
Well, Stan, okay, with respect to Fukushima, my question is really simple. Isn't there one person, one group of people with the intellectual acumen, the ability to put their heads together and say, okay, this is what we need to do to mitigate the problems at Fukushima? Or are we just everyone standing around and waiting for someone else to do something? And or is there just some other reason why we don't care?
I don't know the backroom play on this. I'm only guessing, but it would certainly be in the United States' best interest to bunch of us off because they've got their own protected quarters and food and water supply. I don't know. It'd be easy to say, yeah, that's what the plan is, but I don't know. I look at the plan as a scientist and I say, how could we do that? It's such a mammoth project and there's so many things that can go wrong. You know, the practicalities of it are enormously against us. I mean, it's just, imagine trying to clean the Pacific Ocean of tritium that got loose in it. I mean, it's just an enormous problem. So maybe there is a group that can do it. I mean, maybe there's some magic bullet we don't know about, but they're certainly not sharing with us if they do. And Japan, gosh, the poor people living over there, goodness gracious, the drinking water, you know, their food and stuff, they've been eating stuff that the company that owned the tanks told them, oh, it's safe, you know, you're in a safe area. And the limit for what was safe has been raised by the company, you know, from what was previously thought to be safe. Oh, well, we'll double that. Now it's okay. You're in a safe zone. these poor people have got nowhere to go. They're just land farmers and stuff.
And, you know, we talk about this a lot, and it seems the conversation circles back to the fact that maybe there's something else going on, that Fukushima, that really doesn't matter. I mean, you know, let it go, because something else worse is coming.
Agenda 30, let's remove some of the humans by natural attrition.
Yeah,
look, I can see that happening. Where was I reading something else? In fact, I may have, Prime Minister, President, whatever he calls himself today, Erdogan over at Turkey, he's calling for 6 million homes in Turkey to be demolished and rebuilt to fit the Agenda 21 thing, or Agenda 30 thing for safety. And, of course, that's to move people into tighter groups and off the land. He's actually standing in front of his people saying it now. And in reality, it's an unreal target to get, you know, 6 million homes rebuilt between now and 2030. So he's become more practical and said, well, we need to do that with 6 million, but we'll start with 1.2 million homes. We're going to destroy your home and rebuild it somewhere else, put you in the safe zone. And he's just kind of, you know, the test case, I think, for how people are going to react when they do that to us as well. All these nature areas and stuff they've reserved and the government's taken over now, some of those are probably going to be where they relocate people into these, you know, intensive living cities and stuff where you can only go around on a bicycle or something, or on foot, or on a rail car. No cars are allowed and stuff like that. It's happening. It is happening right in front of our eyes. I'll tell you what, you're going to like Holly's book if you want to get depressed, but if you want to see what's really happening, the details, who's doing it and what, she's got thousands of footnotes showing where she got these things to prove it. But when you read that book, earthquakes, volcanoes, future cities, medicine, diseases, I mean, there's just tons of stuff in there. It's all happening right before our eyes, and the news is not playing it up, you know, not putting it out to the people. And that's, I'm sure, part of somebody stretching up the top that owns the media. But, oh, gosh.
Go to standale.com, and you know, the book you're referencing, of course, Dare to Prepare, but, right? I mean, or am I...
No. She's got a new book coming out. Right. She got a new book. And in that, it's almost as big as Dare. Okay. And Dare you use to prepare, but this is telling you absolutely how close the need for it is, and how much time you don't have to get it done. And I've been proofreading it here in the last few days, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness.
I apologize for that. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
it's
right.
So. I can't wait for the new book to come out, Holly Dale, standale.com. Watch for availability through standale.com.
And Stan, if you can, have Holly come on, and we'll promote her book,
sure.
And we'll do a whole show.
I'm sure she will. She'll come on with you guys.
She just
doesn't like to do those big, you know, coast-to-coast things with millions of people and callers that might give her a stick, you know, so... No, you guys are fine, and I'm sure she'll do that once we've got it being printed. And I think you'll like the book cover. I'm doing it in a 3D
Well, that's great to hear. Knowing you, that it's always a first class operation, whether it's the information or the appearance. It's always first class. So we really appreciate that. So okay, now we're down on video, folks. Okay, but the audio is still good. And you can go to show images. Go to standale.com. Go to show images, and of course there you'll find the show images for tonight's show. And do you want to start in any of these images at all, or
yeah,
do you want to?
Okay. Yeah. Let's go down the third row, first image, which is EQs, earthquakes, USA, last 30 days. Click on that and have a look at this map. These are earthquakes at 2.5 or greater. And the reason I did this is to show how bad the Oklahoma City situation is, just north of it and around it to the east. By far, this is the most earthquake-happening place on the planet. I mean, it's over 900 this year already. We've got friends that live near, I'm sure you do too, Bob Ulrich and Stearman, the rest of them all live in that area.
Sure.
In fact, I was sitting in Stearman's living room with him and Bob one night here last year, I think it was, and a Richter 4 hit up the road a bit, and we felt it. It was kind of thud, and everybody just stopped talking and looked at each other.
Yeah, you mentioned that, I think, last week or one of the past shows.
Well,
yeah.
The map you have here, an amazing visual for those people who don't, I mean, who really want to get a handle on the cluster of earthquakes. And am I to, well, are you, well, rather than assume anything, what do you attribute this to?
Well, obviously there's been a lot of fracking going on there, and they've been taking the water that they get back out of the fracking operation, and they dump it back down into other deep wells, which are seeping into fissures, into what's called the east-west lineament, which is like a huge fault line underground that runs from Washington State down to Florida. And it's either side of that, the north east side and the southwest side, they're moving against each other slowly, have been for ever since we've been here in the country. And that's right on the edge of what's called the Craton Lip. And that's, I guess, what you would call the pillars of the continents, the Bible, the pillars of Earth. Underneath is this very dense, super dense formation that was there, stretching from underneath what the dirt we sit on and kind of slimming down a bit, going toward the mantle, the depth of the mantle to where it becomes plastic again, or, magma. And these cratons, I mean, they're so dense and hard. They're like the kimberlite veins in South Africa and other places where they make diamonds. These are mines that dig down into the craton. Now, the craton has a lip to it. It's not as big as the United States. And the lip is right on the lineament line here, and that's where Oklahoma City is. So I guess I don't know what the wisdom is for having to do all the fracking on a known area like that that's under stress and on the edge of the craton. But everywhere from Oklahoma City back toward Baja and the West Coast is outside the craton, which is not stable. And they're sitting right there fracking on the junction between stable Earth and that'd be northeast, and unstable Earth, which is southwest and west. And I, for the life of me, I don't know if it's just a purely economic decision or an effort to cause the West Coast a lot of trouble and people in obviously Oklahoma City in that area. Anyway, it's an area that I think people should keep an eye on. And I've been getting emails from some of your listeners too about Yellowstone, talking about earthquakes. Yellowstone, they're saying that they're covering up the actual seismic activity and the magnitude of them, and I can't find it to save myself. I can't find evidence of that. Do you know? Has anybody emailed you about where they're getting that information?
No. I've seen a mention of Yellowstone, but I have not seen anything definitive about Yellowstone or any evidence, as you're alluding to, that would suggest something's going on there.
Well, all right. Well, anyway, to those people that were asking about that. Sorry, I tried to find it, but I couldn't.
Stan, what about the sunspot 2529? This humongous sunspot, bigger than the planet.
Oh, you mean the coronal Earth. Hole?
Yes. I'm sorry.
That's on the same line. It's the right image, and yeah, if you click on that and have a look at it, that is a humongous hole in the coronal atmosphere of the sun. And what it's doing, rather than CMEs, it's bombarding us with a super dense solar wind. And, you know, I suspect tonight and tomorrow we'll be seeing magnetic storms on the Earth and heavy bombardment over the South Atlantic anomaly as well. With people in that area will probably be a little bit unhappy if they get some of the rashes and nausea and stuff you get from the bombardment of the rays that get through, especially in the ultraviolet C range. But anyway, yes, this is something to be concerned about. That's why I put the link up there. That's the biggest one I've seen. And we're seeing more of these things, not so much a normal sunspot, like a magnetic field thing, but even though this has magnetic components, this is just a super hole. And I think we're seeing the sun start to do what I was talking about, to do a phase state change. It's going to do something it hasn't done before in recorded history, perhaps ever. And this is leading up to the time of the activities that we see in the prophecies of John and Daniel and others about the behavior of the sun. Anyway, to the picture to the left of that, there's an animation of a flare to the left of that, which is a flare that's emitted from a normal set of magnetic field sunspot type areas. It's quite a beautiful flare to look at, but that too is going to just glance us a little bit. It's coming out kind of gives a semi halo effect. It's going to clip the edge. It's going to clip the Earth, and we'll get some storming from that as well. Anyway, those are the things to look at with the sun. Keep an eye on NOAA and SOHO and others like that, and you'll see what happens. It will be another 28 days before the spot comes around. It'll be interesting to see if it grows any bigger. It could be a worry. I mean, you're looking at the surface of the sun, the coronal surface, which is hotter than the interior of the sun. Get that? It's hotter than the interior of the sun. That's still a mystery to scientists. And that's being thinned out by this coronal hole. So what happens when the coronal envelope around the sun disappears? Is that what's about to happen? Is it going to throw off stuff and make a dust cloud between us and the sun? Anyway, it's not a surprise.
What would be the consequence of that if that does happen? Would it result in a cool down? I'm trying to figure out what would be the consequence of that.
Well, it might cool down, but then again, if we follow biblical prophecy, it's going to heat up. It's going to be so hot when that happens that you won't be able to be outside. You'll be in the basements or in caves and stuff, and underground bunkers to endure the heat. But I think that'll be probably in the last half of the tribulation of the seven-year period. I hope it is anyway, for the sake of the people that will be exposed to it. And look, I expect it to throw off, large chunks of stuff, just very dense clouds of heavy metals. You know, I forget whether it's copper and iron and stuff, but whatever our star has in it, this may be thrown off as particulate clouds around it when the corona that we see, that glowing kind of yellow-reddish glow around it, when that winks out. And I also think that it may increase the diameter of the sun, too. I'm not sure how much. But that's just me. I'm just an amateur. I'm not privy to the actual data, really, that's going on, nor am I qualified to tell people, bend over and kiss it goodbye. But it's something that I am concerned about. Now, okay. When we have a lot of sunspots, the French back in the 70s proved this, we get people get very irritable because of the increased ultraviolet that is seeping through, divorce rates and crime rates climb, and immunities to diseases amongst humans and animals drops. You're more susceptible to flus and viral infections, which brings us to the second line, where we have the Zika threat. is now scarier than they thought before. And you'll see there's a link to the article under that first picture, that woman talking from the Center for Disease Control. They're serious enough about it. They're scared enough about it. They're telling people, don't go out and get mosquito bit. And to that end, in the next two slides over, next two pictures, the one in the middle shows the United States and which states are seeing travelers that have the Zika virus. And this is travelers as opposed to mosquitoes. And the next part over, the next image, is the Zika threat map. Now, there are two types of insects, mosquito types, that carry this Zika virus. And when you see this map, you think, goodness gracious, California, Arizona, Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, all the way over to Virginia, they're in deep trouble from both of these sources. But they stress, when you click on that and look at the picture that I sent there, at the very bottom, the CDC says, these shaded areas on the map do not necessarily mean that there are infected mosquitoes in that area. And that's an important point to make. Don't panic if you live in those areas, because, not all of them are going to be having infected mosquitoes, even though the mosquitoes may be there. But I still think it would be wise to use mosquito repellent and stuff to, prevent the potential exposure to this stuff.
Yeah, when we were in Dallas, those mosquitoes down there, those things are huge compared to up here.
Texas, what do you expect?
I was going to say, everything's huge in Texas, right?
Yeah. I was just surprised. They were everywhere. They were getting inside the building every day at the hotel. They were all over the place. But I didn't see a small one. I saw lots of big
ones. Well, okay, but my question would be, where did this virus come from? Is it man-made? Talk to me.
Well, that is a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I've been looking mainly today at the symptoms of it and, how to avoid it. But let's see, Zika. Okay, you very rarely die of Zika, it says here. If you've been bitten and exposed to it and get over it, which, might be uncomfortable, but you can do it, you're now immune to future strikes of that virus by whatever brings it to you. It was first found in 1947 in the Zika forest in Uganda. So it spread out of Uganda here.
All right. And is it man-made or...
Well, they say it was first discovered in the Zika forest. So discovery, I would assume, means that they discovered it. They didn't create it. But that's the official thing. That's the CDC's official thing on it. I don't know, what else to say. I mean, if you get it, you're going to be hurting physically. And you're going to need plenty of rest, and you'll dehydrate, so you need to drink lots of water and stuff. And, aspirin, Tylenol, paracetamol, things like that will reduce your fever and your pain.
Sure.
Can endure it.
Yeah. Well, okay, now here's the investigator in me, the investigator side in me, the skeptic side in me, with respect to Zika. Only to look at the big picture, it's interesting because Latin America, especially Venezuela, here we have this threat of small head in babies, newborn babies, microencephalopathy.
Yep.
Whatever that word is. Anyway.
Right.
it's interesting to me that you've got this huge, this number of people who are saying, help me, Zika in Venezuela, I need abortion. And you have ships actually taking women in out of Africa in the international waters where it's not legal, abortion is not allowed, it's not permissible, giving them abortions. Okay, so the skeptic part of me in this is really, red flags, bells, whistles are going off, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, is there something wrong here with this picture? Just asking now,
Okay.
Because, you know, the numbers seem to be disproportionate to the cases of small-headed children. Anyway, that's just, I'm at,
yeah,
so I guess,
microcephaly.
Exactly. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, interesting to note, they don't have a vaccine for this, but since it's not likely to be fatal, just give you a fever, rash, and joint pain, and red swollen eyes. Well, that's doable. It might take you 2 or 3 weeks to get over it or whatever. But I would think if they created it, which I doubt, that there would have been a vaccine in the back room. But I just think it'll be uncomfortable. What did Holly and I got bitten here a couple years ago? Some little mosquito-borne thing, and we had the sore joints and malaise, and a couple weeks later it was gone. So you just trust the good Lord that, you know, you'll weather what you need to weather.
Right. Right. Just suck it up and do it.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the mosquitoes, they flourish in swampy, humid areas. And we're getting a lot of rain in various places, but we've also, this year in February, we had the hottest, anomalously hot northern hemisphere in 136 years. That top row right picture shows you the map that shows right down the center of North America and shows most of Russia and Europe and probably a lot of Canada as well, yeah, and Alaska. All those were anomalously hot, and now we've got the rain at weird periods in weird places. I'm sure that we'll get steam, and it'll be, you know, breeding grounds for these mosquitoes. Now, they can carry other diseases other than Zika, but, you know, bird flu and various other things. So let's, you know, let's keep an eye on that, too. I mean, our seasons are changing. I don't know why we're getting hotter. There's a record of it. You click on the thing beneath that, the little text that says read about it. It'll take you over to the page at earthobservatorynasa.gov, and it gives you from 1980 to 2016 the recorded monthly mean global surface temperature of the planet. You know, it's the whole thing. And from about 1980, when it was about 0.4 above the mean, we're now here to where we are in February to 1.3. So that's nearly, what, 300%, something like that. Well, I guess if you take the 0.4 off of it, it's not that much, but let me just do that here and divide that by 0.4. Yeah, it's 225% greater in 35 years, 36 years. It's a constant wavy line going up. If you look at the trend curve on this anomalous heating, when we hit 2 degrees centigrade above the mean, which we're headed for, serious things start to happen in the weather and the climate, serious things. When that happens, if it goes the other way, if you go minus 2 degrees, say, down from the mean, you get an ice age. If you go up 2 degrees plus, which is where we're headed, other bad things happen as far as severe weather.
But we don't have necessarily, we don't have, or do we have data pre-1980?
I don't know. It might be unreliable, you know, some
okay,
of the
right.
election sources. That, but anyway, this curve is independent, it looks like to me anyway. It's independent of the sunspot cycles, other than a slight sine wave I see in it here. I'm just trying to see what years those were. Well, let's see, 2016, go back 11 at 2005. Yeah, it's not correlating exactly with sunspot activity, but there is a very subtle wavy, you know, sine wave pattern to this increasing heat anomaly. So it's probably related to something directly with the sun. It seems to be pretty regular sinus pattern. So anyway, that's that. Now, you were talking before we went on the air tonight, Doug and Joe, you know, the tax time is here. We're coming up to the deadline. I didn't get a warm and fuzzy feeling when I read this article, I've got up in the top row in the middle there about the IRS computers. They're getting hit a million times a day. A million times a day by malicious attempts, or in other words, hackers trying to get into the IRS and get information and probably destroy the system. And yet, you know, the head of the Senate Finance Committee was told by this John Koskinen, the commissioner of the IRS there, that, you know, it's a pretty robust system and not to worry. And, you know, I hope he's right. But, you know, a million times a day with the Chinese and whoever else, the North Koreans coming at it, I can see that we're going to have a problem with that. One of these days, but I guarantee it's probably not going to be that you get a lot of extra refunds from the tax man, and especially since they're sending a bunch over to Russia at the moment. Guess who would be hacking to get that?
I wonder, you know, we see they're admitting to these cyber hacks with the IRS department. How long until they come out and say, well, the Social Security Department has been hacked, or Social Security Administration has been hacked, and there is no funds left as they were gutted from the attack? How long until we see something like that?
Are we talking about a cyber attack or the House of Representatives and the Senate attacking it to get funds transferred elsewhere for something else they wanted?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, that will be the excuse. And I just saw an article the other day about this, about the how they plan to, you know, the massive amount of cyber adversity that is being they're facing now in the military and private sector, and how they're trying to fortify their defenses as to stop the intrusions from other nations like Russia and China through cyber attacks. And there was an article in the not too distant past that talked about how the power grid was infiltrated by Iranian hackers, and how they had the ability to shut down huge segments of the nation's power grid had access to do so. I mean, how many of these breaches can we absorb before it hits us hard?
Boy, do you ever feel like you're standing on the edge of a cliff about to fall over in a deep valley somewhere?
Oh, I fell a long time ago.
Yep. That was a long time ago.
Okay.
I'm
just waiting for the splat.
More of your readers or listeners have been saying to me about to watch Prince Bin Salman, you know, the deputy deputy king, or, you know, he's second in line to become the king of Saudi Arabia, this young Mohammed Bin Salman. Apparently he's really gained a lot of popular support over there. He's not technically supposed to be allowed to become king, and so his cousin or uncle or somebody, it's not a Bin Salman, it's Bin Nayef, I think. He's about 56 years old, right? And he's supposed to take over from King Salman when he steps down, and he's going to step down pretty soon because he's ill, I'm pretty sure. Now, it's put the son of King Salman, Bin Salman, it's pitted him against this Bin Nayef guy. He shouldn't have, but the King Salman has, even though he's done the right thing and named Bin Nayef as the crown prince to take over after him, he's given his son, King Prince Salman, all kinds of power, you know, over the oil industry, over military. There's several portfolios he has, which are very powerful portfolios in Saudi Arabia. And your listeners are writing in saying, you know, you're right, watch this guy. He's gaining real stature there. And right now he's, you know, trotting around talking to various heads of state in the Middle East. Don't know exactly what he's talking about. Some of it is about arms production, things like that. But a lot of it is about mutual defense against Iran and ISIS and things like that. 70% of the population of Saudi Arabia is under age 30. And 40% of them are unemployed. Now, they're looking to young Bin Salman to pull him out of that. He's young, he's got, you know, progressive ideas, and he seems to know what he's doing with the company, you know, the oil company for Saudi Arabia. And they would probably back him if like a coup, in other words. And so there's trouble brewing there, even though, you know, you wouldn't think so. They've got it all together, but there's a lot of grassroots objection to young bin Salman taking over from the older crowd, not from the young ones. It's a young person's world, not only there, but everywhere else on the planet. And young people, you know, they don't know enough, and they will make mistakes. And I can see that happening in our election here with who they choose for president. Anyway, that's young bin Salman.
Well, you know, and this leads me back to my own intellectual or, you know, discourse, my discussion with myself, admitting I talk to myself, apparently. But just trying to really reason this out, okay, with respect to an Antichrist figure or the Antichrist in the end, I'm really looking at this from all different perspectives. And maybe I'm hobbled by the West by looking at this from a strictly Western perspective. But it would be my understanding that the Antichrist would be charismatic and have a lot of followers and deceive many people, and especially deceiving the Christians. So in my mind, I'm thinking, wouldn't this automatically disqualify at this time, at this stage in our history, wouldn't that disqualify a Muslim? Or not necessarily? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I've battled with that too. But whoever he is going to have to satisfy both Muslim, Christian, and Jewish populations of the planet if he's going to make a united government. There will be a special set of circumstances that will lead the world to accept a person who will appease them all. And that's why we keep looking back at the Pope over there. He's laying the groundwork for the Antichrist if he's not part of him. He's laying the groundwork by unifying all the religions of the world into one religion.
Exactly. Talking about this ecumenical movement. The Pope, I saw this article today, six things the Pope said today that have shocked the world. One, divorced or remarried individuals should be welcomed into the church. Two, there should be more equality between the sexes. Three, unmarried couples shacking up are no longer living in sin. Four, sex is the key to human happiness.
Paraphrasing, of course.
No, this is...
No, I mean, you're paraphrasing. Shacking up, the Pope did not say shacking up. All right.
He says, Pope Francis begged for tolerance of alternative lifestyles, saying Catholics have often been on the defensive, wasting pastoral energy on denouncing a decadent world without being proactive in proposing ways to find true happiness. Then he goes on to say, sex is the key to human happiness.
Okay.
Quoting German philosopher Joseph Piper, passion mixed with love reveals the marvel of which the human heart is capable. In this way, even momentarily, we can feel that life has turned out good and happy.
All right, my point was simply he didn't say shocking up.
Right.
I gotcha. Okay.
And he also says that he recommends tolerance for same-sex romantic relationships, although he won't equate them to the level of marriage. He said we should avoid discrimination and have a respect for same-sex unions, as they are important for a child's upbringing.
Let's tolerate it, Stan. Well, let's tolerate everything. I mean, our nation does not have a tolerance problem. We have a problem. We have a tolerance problem.
Archbishop Charles Chaput once said, evil preaches tolerance until it is dominant. Then it turns into, then it tries to silence the good.
And there it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how it's going to come to pass, but I think that the people of the world will leap at the opportunity to have someone rule the planet, you know, and solve the problems. And to do that, they're going to have to solve the problem of the Muslim, Christian, Jewish conflict. They're going to have to solve the partitioning issue in Israel. They're going to have to solve the threat of North Korea. They're going to have to solve the threat of Iran. By the way, Iran is complaining because it wants to have its own nuclear detonators, and it wants to do everything it can to break the treaty, and it's saying that we're being unfair because, you know, the United States is supplying Saudi Arabia and other countries with weapons. And they're now using that argument to justify breaking the treaty. But anyway, that's going to have to be fixed. And a lot of other little problems that are probably underneath that. But the threat of nuclear global war is the main issue there. And so who does solve that? Well, he's going to be a champion, and people will overlook a lot of things that are ignorant of what is really happening. Gosh, I just can't believe we're living in these times, watching it happen almost day by day.
Hey, Stan, what do you think of this? Last week, we came across this article out of Fox News, and this is right out of Agenda 21. It says, the UN starts towards new control over the world's oceans. United Nations launched a far-reaching initiative that would give the UN-sponsored authorities sway over biological resources of the high sea, all the waters that lie outside national territories and economic zones. As much as 30% of the world's international waters would be designated as no-go areas for biodiversity projects and for the future of ocean development. And obviously the oceans make up the majority of the area of our planet, but the UN is looking to own the oceans.
Well, that would be interesting then, because international waters, you know, doesn't count anymore. You could be prosecuted or, you know, apprehended for something in international waters because the UN has the authority then.
Very interesting. They can control the, you know, fishing and resources that are the waterways that are used to transport goods and services. It would give them total control not only of the waters, but what comes in and out and back and forth and through the waters. Correct?
You know, Joe, we see this and we complain about it. We're not against resource management. If Jesus were in charge of the United Nations, we'd trust him to organize the planet. But he's not. The evil in this world is, and that's the problem. What they're suggesting in the hands of a truly benevolent king, you know, an all-powerful king like Jesus would be, will be, that would work. And we would support that, too, to be good managers of the resources of the planet, and we'd have to pull in our belt, and which he will have us do when the tribulation period is over. So, logically speaking, we know that the things they're proposing for global resource management are good ideas, except they are in the hands of the wrong people.
Okay. They absolutely are.
We've got about 3 or 4 dozen. And that's my estimate, emails asking, and I better ask or else we're going to have a revolt here. Stan, you're in Colorado. Thoughts on what happened with the delegate issue, if you have any? I mean, if you have any heavy, you know, thoughts on
it? Well, you know, look, it seemed to be like a blindside to Trump, but he's had a year to look at what the Republican Party here had done. Not that I'm happy about it, but they changed the way they were doing it here about a year ago, and you know, Trump knew within several months of that that he was going to run for president. And if he'd have done like Cruz came over here and started lobbying the people that would be in this decision making process in the Republican Party here in Colorado, and he could have done the same thing. Trump could have come in and lobbied him as well, but he didn't do it. And he's only got himself to blame on that. He should have come over and done it. But because the process of selecting your candidates for your party varies from state to state so much, he may not have been able to do that. Maybe would have lost access to another state that he needed to lobby as well, had a different type of caucus system. I think it just points out the absurdity of the way we're doing these elections. You know, okay. A popular vote would be nice. You know, get an actual vote for a president of the people, and not from representative groups that, you know, form and power structures that are so far removed from the man in the street that they can screw the vote up any way they want. Anyway,
it just and a lot of people, you know, wanted to get your take on it because you're right at ground zero of the action, basically, and yeah, and so the perception is really interesting when we look at it, and
obviously, I'm not happy about it, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're going to play with the big boys, if Trump's going to play with the big boys, he's got to, you know, realize that he's got to take care of situations like this and try to be ahead of them. But as I said, maybe he's just got so many of these things that there were scheduling conflicts where he just could not do what he needed to as far as lobbying Colorado.
Right. It seems like it's the state's all different moving target. It's almost, it does smack of manipulation, even though I get it that, you know, this rule change or this was done in August and I understand all that, but the perception is that it was pretty underhanded, and I think there. Do you get the feeling that our response is being that we're being goaded into responding or reacting into like a civil war kind of, you know, they're really stoking us up.
Yeah, look, there's been nothing but a method to divide us, and in this state, you know, where they've legalized pot and people are moving in and doing business and stuff in the drug trade because of it, I don't know whether it's tonight or tomorrow, but the Sanders is going to absolutely stomp Clinton in this state. Talk about left-wing socialists. And it's got to be people that are smoking dope that would support him. This state is not a red state. It's a blue state, and it's just getting worse.
Yeah, it's... Well, lawlessness is increasing. The immorality is... And at the root of everything, I guess, to shorten that conversation up, I guess at the root of everything, it's this... We are suffering from a very serious spiritual ailment and spiritual problems. That's at the root of really everything, right? I mean...
We're separating the sheep from the goats. There seem to be more goats than sheep at the moment.
Right.
Excellent. Hey, last thing. We've got about a minute or two. Continuing research on the Atlantis thing. I thought I'd share with you one of the things I found about the Minoan artwork, you know, on the Santorini, the island where they thought that was Atlantis. I think they were an outlier, you know, because Plato said that the Atlanteans had influence all the way up into Europe from where Atlantis was. But this painting or this fresco that I've shown here shows the young men of Santorini practicing bull jumping. And if you look at this, click on it and look at the picture of it, these bulls were ancient bulls with the two horns close together and very long. And that's why I put in the next slide over there, the next box, pictures of what's called an aurochs today, A-U-R-O-C-H-S. And they are descended from the bulls, the cows that you see in the bulls that you see in the Santorini fresco. Now, if you click in the writing underneath, it'll take you to articles about the fact that they have discovered that about 10,000 years ago, every cow, every bull, every bovine creature on the planet with horns is a descendant of a small tribe of about 80 to 100 cattle in the Jordan, Syria, Israel, Iraq area, which was the middle, they call it the Fertile Crescent, and that was the middle of Atlantis. And if you read Plato, the Atlanteans worshipped the bull, and they had all kinds of ceremonies, you know, involving the bull in the palace and all kinds of stuff like that. So we're just getting closer and closer to absolutely, you know, nailing Atlantis. In fact, today I saw one problem with Atlantis about what they call the Fertile Plain. It's the Fertile Crescent now. It was the Fertile Plain. I've been looking for a flat area that was 330 miles by 220 miles rectangular, and I've been looking for all of them being a fairly close altitude or elevation. Couldn't find it until I realized that you can be slanted and have it
Stan.
Flat. Gotta go.
Started to cut you off, but we're at the end, buddy.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Can't believe it. Wow, we're out of here.
See you next week.
Still more. All right.
Till tomorrow.
Bye-bye.